It was, I don't know. I just went on survival mode.
Supermodel and independent businesswoman Beverly Johnson came forward and stated that back in 1986, Cosby gave her a cappuccino laced with drugs and attempted to sexually assault her.
I didn't really believe it. I just started to swear and curse and had a tirade. I wanted him to know that I knew he had drugged me.
Johnson also said that coming forward isn't about taking down the famous actor and comedian. She said there are larger issues at stake.
This is bigger than Bill Cosby. This is about women and violence on women. This is about women finding their voice.
And on a more positive note, Time magazine editor Nancy Gibb released the name of the person of the year. The annual acknowledgement is granted to the person or persons who, for better or worse, did the most to influence the news of that year.
The Ebola fighters. These men and women did the hard and dangerous work of treating patients and protecting the rest of us.
Dr. Kent Brantley is one of the Ebola fighters featured on the upcoming Time magazine cover.
This is a huge honor to be part of the group that's being recognized as Time magazine's Person of the Year. This is not simply a historic event that we're looking back on, but it's still happening right now. The Ebola fighters are not just people who did something brave and courageous. They are still in the trenches fighting that war as we speak.
That's your news update. Now, back to the Urban Cafe.
Thank you for listening to the best of the Urban Cafe.
WMNF hosts its first celebration of homegrown heroes Sunday, August 19th at the Gulfport Casino, and you can join the celebration. WMNF is honoring Tampa Bay individuals and organizations who are sowing the seeds of equality and peace and promoting social, economic, and environmental justice. Your organization can sponsor a table for eight for $300. Individual tickets are $35 in advance, $40 at the door. Details are at WMNF.org. Join WMNF for live entertainment, local food, a silent auction, and a celebration of homegrown heroes. Sunday afternoon, August 19th from 2 to 6 at the Gulfport Casino.
WMNF is celebrating our 39th birthday at Ella's Americana Folk Art Cafe in Tampa, Monday, September 10th. Street of Dreams features Prohibition-era cocktails and hors d'oeuvres. Dean Johannesson and the 24-Hour Men provide the dreamy soundtrack. And I, DJ Lounge Laura Taylor, and DJ The Onaloo from Surface Noise spin era-appropriate songs in between. Tickets at Ella's, 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org. Come dream with us.
Pure Love Foundation in association with WMNF 88.5 FM presents Righteous Rockers Music Festival featuring Papa San, King of the Dance Hall, Roots Rock Reggae Sensation, Wayne Stunner, Keeping It Loud, DJ Nicholas, and the Dancehall Diva, Kerry Diamond. Also the cool compa vibes of award-winning Evangel Band, Don Benza, Guinness World Record Freestyle Holder, Cicely Styles, Itty, Wingy Danger, Randy Freeman, featuring the newest member of the 116 Click, 1K View. Also, other performances featuring Concept 7, hosted by Tampa's own MC Urban D. Back to school giveaways and lots more. A variety of ethnic food, children, water park, play area. This is all happening at the Waterworks Park in Tampa Bay. For more information, log on to www.righteousrockersmovement.com or call 803-820-1446. The one you lit, sell off.
Now back to the best of the Urban Cafe.
Thank you, Jerome, on that. And that's something that to pay close attention to as far as you mentioned that certain organs and certain functions is overworked. That's very interesting to me. So I wanted to go back into what Joshua was speaking about in regards to anxiety and depression and also stress that's, you know, exhibited in through going through the cancer process, all of these emotional reactions, right? So I would like for Jerome and Dr. Marquita Wills to go further into what is referred to as clinical depression, which is a mental health disorder characterized by persistently depressed moods or loss of interest in activities causing significant impairment in one's daily life. Who would like to start first? Flip a coin.
It's Mother's Day, so.
Oh. Well, I'm not a mother, but I suppose I technically could be one. I'll go ahead and get started. So as Lo gave a great definition of clinical depression, are we talking about this in relation to the cancer or just in general?
Just in general.
Okay. So clinical depression is something that's caused by many things. There are many precipitants to it, but the one thing that we have to all understand is we all go through low periods in life, whether it be loss of a loved one, whether it be divorce, whether it be job loss, all kinds of things can precipitate low persistent moods. And most of the time, most of us can just sort of get out of it. Over time, we get out of it and we kind of move through our daily days. But there are some times when people kind of get stuck with the low feelings. And so when you have persistently low mood, as Lo described, and you're unable to sort of get out of it, it's definitely worth getting treatment. I don't think that everyone needs to be treated with drugs. I think some people can be treated with talk therapy. I think some people can be treated with psychosocial supports, such as group therapy or support groups. But it definitely should require some sort of intervention and some sort of attention. Just like if you've got a toothache, you don't just let that go. With depression, you need to treat that the same way and make sure to come out of it. And sometimes you can't see for yourself that you're actually depressed. It's going to be other people around you that are going to notice for you that you're going through something. And so you've got to have trust and faith in your loved ones that they're not steering you in the wrong direction as well.
And I'm going to throw back to you when we get to another topic, Dr. Wills, in regards to suicide. I wanted to actually ask a specific question for Jerome in regards to clinical depression and stress eating, because you are a person that talks a lot about food and how it affects your body, your mental space and behavior. So can you discuss as far as maybe clinical depression and if that actually relates directly to stress eating or how it can roll into a clinical depression state?
Yes. A lot of times when people get depressed, they want a lot of sweets. And because the sweets is love. And you want to feel love. You need to either have a problem receiving love or giving love. That's why they go to the sweets for the sugar. Because, you're thinking on a birthday, we give somebody a birthday cake, you're showing them love. It's out of love. So unconsciously, we want the sweets because that makes us feel love and make us feel wanted. And before you know it, we'd be obese and all that, because our body triggered that, but it's supposed to be temporary, like the doctor said. We're supposed to be able to pull ourselves out of that state of mind. But a lot of us don't have the knowledge and understanding of what's actually going on, and we stay in this state of mind way too long, and now it becomes a health issue. It becomes a problem.
And one of our Facebook viewers actually commented, she stated that we need to focus on the underlying issue, on how we get to becoming obese to begin with. And I just felt like that could be one of the reasons, as far as, we eat when we're stressed. That's, in part, not the total or full absolute reason, but, in part, it does. I know myself, I'm a stress eater. So I definitely understand the underlying reasons on why there is weight gain. So I appreciate your perspective on that.
When clients come to me and they say they're depressed, that's a very vulgar term. I tell them to talk more in depth. Why? Go more in depth. What are you feeling? Do you feel like crying? Say, I feel like crying. Then you cry. And why do you feel like crying? I make them search. Search all the way down to that underline. We need to get to the bottom of it. That's the only way I can bring you out of it. So we search. Just telling me you're depressed, that I need you to, I just find an avenue to get them to drive them down to the very bottom of it so we can come up from there.
Hey, what's going on, Jerome? This is Clarence again. I just want to ask you real quick a question. In my day job, I'm a pharmacy technician, and I work in a cancer-focused institute. So on a daily basis, I'm making chemotherapy all day, every day, and a lot of them are high toxicity. And with you speaking about food and health, I wanted to know what are some foods that can help detox the body quickly or recover a person that has gone through cancer and needing to get back to their normal state of mind or state of body, I wanted to know, you know, could you suggest some things that you might have recommended to folks, or just, you know, off the top of your head, a few things that you know will help to detox a person and get their body back to a healthy state?
Well, what I would, especially working around what you're working around, I would be eating a lot of raw foods. What I mean by raw foods, a lot of raw fruits and vegetables. That would be a good portion of my diet, because that would allow my body to be able to get the enzymes it needs, to be able to be, it's easy to digest and things like that. My meat consumption would be very, very low, because I don't want nothing that's going to clog up my digestive tract. And that's, like I say, that's where your immune system starts at, right there. So that's the one thing you don't want to do, is clog up your digestive tract. And how you could know that certain things is kind of messing up, say, your spleen and your pancreas, it likes the sweet. Yeah, you craving sour stuff, that's probably your liver. Pugnant foods is more so your intestines, and bitter foods are your heart and your small intestines. So things of that type of stuff. Salty foods, they can tell you got a kidney issue or a sex organ issue. So when you start having these different cravings, you kind of know what's going on inside your body, because it's your body talking to you.
Wow, that's great. Thanks, brother.
Hey, Joshua, I want to kind of toss to you up. Yeah, well, I want to talk to you, Joshua. When you were in recovery, and I know you probably still are, kind of, but what was your, how did your diet change? After, you know, what did you find that made you feel better or helped you feel stronger? Or what were the foods you relied on, or the things you relied on diet-wise to help you, you know, move on?
Well, it's a great question, and also Jerome, you know, I think he hit the nail on the head, but I think it's for, at least again, for cancer patients specifically, it's two-pronged, right? So there's the nutrition you have while you're going through treatment, and depending on the severity of treatment, you know, I got to a point where I was like, you know, whatever I can tolerate. You know, I mean, yes, you go into the mindset as like, oh, I'm going to eat healthy, da da da. But it gets to a point where the toxicity is just completely ravaged your body, and you're nauseous at the smell of a hot dog, like in my case. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I just, whatever I could tolerate. But post treatment, which is where, you know, the focus of cleansing the body should be, like Jerome mentioned about the liver and so forth. So he mentions me. I basically, from the moment I was diagnosed, I stopped eating red meat, in the sense of no more beef. So that's, I haven't had beef in 11 years. And then I haven't had pork in 10 years. So for me, it was more, it was a quasi-informed decision, like about everything. And you referred to it earlier, that about how the meats, not just our process, but actually what we're feeding, you know, the swine, what we're feeding our cattle, right? And so that eventually makes it to your body. And so, and no one has been able to tell me how I got my cancer, right? Because no one in my family has this specific form of cancer. And so that, in my mind, it was like, you are what you eat. And so I haven't had beef or pork ever since then. I would say for about a year and a half, I was basically a pescatarian, I guess is the reference in Western culture. And so, but then when I started cycling, shout out to our listener, and I started doing some other like long distance events, I really needed some more protein intake. And so, you know, but then it got to economics, which is also, we need to talk about economics and, you know, mental health and depression, right? So you can have a vegetarian triathlete life, but you have to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. So in my case, I couldn't pay for it, you know, and so I started eating chicken again, because it was just more affordable. It was an easy way for me to get protein, right? And so that's kind of how I approached it. I definitely, for chemotherapy, it lowers your, you become anemic. Like I'm basically permanently anemic, so I try to make sure that my red blood cells have enough oxygen. And how do I do that? So I have foods with high oxygen intake, and so like berries and stuff like that. And so from iron level, right? Because I don't eat beef, so not only do I not eat beef, the chemotherapy affected me as well, anemia wise and so how do I compensate that? With a green leaves, right? Like, so like spinach and kale and other items like that, quinoa, which is a grain, but it's not like rice, and so it's not going to fatten me a ton, but quinoa actually has a high protein content, you know, per measurement. And so that's how I approached it.
And so, Joshua, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Jerome.
Also, look into dandelion, the vegetable dandelion. Very good for regenerating new red blood cells. Also, get you some moringa. Moringa is very good for iron. It has loaded with iron. Those two things I will add into You could make a smoothie out of it or whatever. Those are things I would do to help bring your iron levels back up and keep them stable.
All right, good information. And Joshua, you mentioned the chemotherapy, and I wanted to kind of circle back to that in regards to the chemo fog and how it can be a permanency for some people. And Dr. Wills, I wanted to get you on that discussion because I'm thinking that if it's a permanency for some people, that can pretty much drive you out of control, you know, and I shouldn't try to avoid using the word crazy, but, you know, it can drive a person crazy in a sense. So I wanted to know how that may relate to, like, maybe suicide, as far as, you know, when you're trying to get better, you have to use the chemotherapy. I suppose that may be the best solution, but then you have a permanency with this chemo fog. Can that escalate into, you know, I guess, I don't know if they call it the clinical depression, but how can that escalate into suicide?
Sure. Well, it's just suicide in general is probably the number one cause for firearm deaths, is the number one cause for firearm deaths, and we often talk a lot about homicide, but don't talk a lot about suicide. Suicide is probably one of the most preventable types of deaths that there are, in the sense that if we treat the clinical depression that precedes it, then we can alleviate and prevent the suicide that comes as a result. When we're talking about suicide as it relates to cancer and probably the effects of chemo brain, it absolutely could lead to that. If someone, people often talk about people having dementia, and before it goes on too far, they do things to harm themselves because they don't want to see themselves decline cognitively in that way. One thing that I do want to say about cancer and mental health in particular, I've often heard people say something like, well, of course you're going to be depressed, you have cancer. Mm-hmm. And then they don't take the extra step to treat the depression that comes along with the cancer. And studies have shown that if you treat the mental illness that goes along with the physical illness outcomes are better. Mm-hmm. So people do better when their mental health is taken care of as well. So don't always think that that's just a secondary side effect and it shouldn't be treated. It absolutely should be independently treated as well.
Great, good to know. I think
I agree with her on that. And like when I tell people, like, understanding, knowledge comes, they clear a lot of depression. A lot of people come, they got this cancer, first thing they think, I'm going to die. So once I explain to them what cancer is, we all have these free radical cells inside our body. But what we're lacking, a lot of antioxidants from the foods, go back to the foods, we're not eating a lot of food that gives a lot of antioxidants. So that causes the free radicals to grow, and we're taking in too much carbon dioxide, and not enough, not releasing enough, getting in enough oxygen. But that carbon dioxide, our cells basically become just crazy, and they just run around, and they start multiplying, and that would cause cancer cells, a tumor. It just grow. But once you start changing the environment, because the cancer, free radicals, they don't want vegetables. They don't want fresh fruit. They don't want water. They want sodas. They want juice. They want all this sugary. They want processed food. And once you feed them that will make it grow crazy.
Rome, when you talk about the free radicals, I think about that commercial on TV with the big red guy and the red juices, and I always wondered, is that not that one? Palm something, palm.
The Cadbury stuff.
Yeah, is that it?
No.
They talk about the free radicals. They talk about the palm. Palm Wonderful.
Okay.
Right, Palm Wonderful. Is that a real thing? Is that something that works against these free radicals? That's the only time I heard that word, being promoted, as they talk about free radicals and stuff. Palm, it's like a...
Is it pomegranate? Is that what you're thinking of?
It's a commercial where the guy is like a sumo guy. It is. That's what it is? It's really pomegranate juice? Okay, all right.
Yes, pomegranate juice is a good, has a lot of antioxidants in it. So, yes, it works. That's what you want, is to get a lot of antioxidants in. So, that's why I feel like papaya is good. Mangoes is good, so things like that. And of course, all your dark green leafy vegetables are always good. But we got away from eating like that. We used to eat like that back in the day, but we don't eat like that no more. So we get back to just incorporate. I tell people, just eat if you drink at least 32 ounces of smoothie a day, you'll be all right.
All right, and Jamal, you had a comment?
Yes, a quick question for Dr. Wills and also for Jerome. Suicide is often linked to depression or clinical depression. Is suicide like linked to other possible mental health disorders? Should people be on the lookout for that?
Yes, that's a great question. So suicide is often found in bipolar disorder as well as schizophrenia. So those are other two clinical states. Great question. That one often sees an increase incidence of suicide. Oftentimes when people come from a depression and they have bipolar and they become activated and swing the other way into more of a manic state, now they've got the energy to take care of the feelings that they were having before. So that's a very vulnerable state. So bipolar is a state that we need to watch out for too. I'm tossing it to Jerome.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said about earlier about the lithium. If you Google one of the lithium with schizophrenia, you'll see that as one of the medicine. What they do, they look at nature and they copy nature into a drug and they give it to the people. But you can get the lithium naturally through green leafy foods and stuff like that. But yes, that's very true. That is, I'll go back to not getting in the right nutrients, understanding what the body actually needs. Instead of just giving it these drugs. But it will cause a suicide thoughts and once you hurt yourself because you're not understanding. Your nerves is going crazy. Your thought pattern is going crazy. It's not balanced. Your hormones is racing. Everything is all off whack. I try to explain to people. I say, look at it like this. Your amino acids, I mean, your enzymes are your workers. Your nutrients are the material. Your hormones are the foreman. So on this construction site, if one of them get off whack, the whole construction site is going to be off whack. Your building is not going to be stable, and the building is the organism.
All right, thanks, Jerome. We have some callers. Callers remain online for us. Appreciate you. But before we go on break, I'm going to throw to Jamal on Facebook Live. I think Ms. Maya is on Facebook Live.
Yes. Thank you, guys. So we have a comment from Nerman. He says, to be diagnosed with PTSD, one has to go to psychologist, licensed clinical diagnosis, which I got in the year 2010 via Department of Health and Human Services. But that changed after 2010 with advent of Citizens United Supreme Court decision, corporations having more rights as 501c3 taxes exempt.
All right. We have any more comments, guys? If not, we can read them once we come back after the break. So callers, stay online, and we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hey, it's your girl, Marilyn Shaw. Thank you for tuning to 88.5 WMNF. Sorry we're not here with you, the Urban Cafe, but tune in to next week for our latest topics.
LDE traveling safety tips. Many unsuspected surprises can occur when you're traveling alone or with family and friends. Here are some LDE tips to keep you safe when traveling. Number one, plan your spring break trip in advance. Last minute travel plans and special deals are not always the safest way to travel. Number two, do not share too much information about your itinerary on social media outlets. This could endanger you and your loved ones. Number three, create code words or symbols for your family and friends in case of an emergency. Number four, if you're underage, do not drink. For those who do anyway and the adults who drink, do not drink in a hot tub. Alcohol dilates the blood vessels and lowers the blood pressure to dangerous levels. The effects of the consumption of alcohol are stronger and faster within the body if you are sitting in a hot tub. Number five, never take a drink from a stranger or leave your drink or food unattended while at a party or social event. Number six, make sure you are properly vaccinated before traveling in and out of the United States. Number seven, make extra copies of your driver's license and passport. Number eight, always carry emergency cash and travel insurance when possible. Note, consider traveling with religious organizations, group retreats, or community functions. It's safer when you travel together with organized people. I'm Maya Carpenter, and those are your LDE safety tips.
WMNF. At the end of the day, black women are trying to defend themselves while drowning, okay? Black women are drowning in America and having to defend themselves with the same arms that they're supposed to be using to get to the top for air. So while a black woman who is used to being the most ripped off, imitated but never duplicated figure on the earth. And I don't say that because I'm in a room with black women. It just is what it is from a historical perspective. There is nothing in this world that has been done that the black women didn't do first. You want to talk about modeling? You want to talk about mathematics? You want to talk about science? There is nothing on this earth that the African diasporic woman hasn't done. I'm talking about in the Caribbean, from to Europe to the United States. There is nothing that they haven't done. But at the same time, they do not receive credit for it. They're vilified for it. Their minds, their bodies, their spirit. Everybody's talking about Hidden Figures. That's great. It's fantastic. I'm not knocking it, but guess what? Even though Three Sisters weren't special, if you look at it, I can assure you that there were some more Hidden Figures who built that building.
Yeah.
There were more, excuse me, Hidden Figures who wrote the math books that those sisters mastered. That's why they mastered it so well. Mm-hmm. But we, despite all of that, we have to focus always on the way that you look.
Yeah.
You spend so much time, black women spend so much time on the way that they look, because that is what, that is the only thing that we give them the ability to find worth in, is how they look.
Thanks to technology constantly growing, listeners can now text the DJ from your cell phones. That's right. Send a text to the DJ while you're listening to their show. Just send your text to 813-433-0885 and let the DJ know what you're thinking. Tell the DJ what you want to hear, or just simply say, hey, you're doing a great job. 88.5 WMNF believes communicating is the key. When you call a DJ or write a letter to the station, that's golden. And now you can send your DJ a text from your cell phone while you're listening. So try it now. Pick up your phone, send a text to 813-433-0885 and let the DJ know that you're tuned in to 88.5 WMNF.
New text message received.
You're listening to the best of the Urban Cafe.
I'm natural too. Born natural, grew up natural. It's only until like maybe high school, end of high school year, that I decided to experience with a perm. Mom hated it. And that was then, because my mom taught me how to do things for myself. So I always did my own hair. I didn't go to anybody else to pay for it, things like that. And I think with the comments that I read on Facebook Live and Elizabeth, our caller that called, it was great for her, for them to say that we use it for versatility in terms of a personal expression in a way. And I think because of how social media and society pin certain hairstyles to certain groups of people in terms of it being like European or too Caucasian or just not natural, has a way of people having this stigma in their head, oh, she's being fake, things like that. And I think it's great that we're having this discussion, because I always want a discussion like this, because like Valtrinda said, I change my hair a lot. It's my form of expression and something I know I'm very good at, even though it's not the only thing. It's what I do, I love to do. And I
feel like you're doing it because you're trying to, you know, show something, but you really have to take care and make sure that you don't argue so thoroughly your point that you end up destroying the girls behind you who are doing it, because they are being victims of Eurocentric beauty standards.
And I'm a substitute teacher, so I have witnessed young girls coming to me with that same issues. And for me, with my point of it being versatility, I try to, in my way, uplift them. Like, you're beautiful with or without it. And I understand that takes a time for someone that young to get over all that negativity being poured into their image that they're naturally born with. And I'm getting really emotional.
Please do, because it's that important.
It is important. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a two-way street. And there's a positive part of it and there's a negative part of it. And you have to get deep down into the person that's being influenced by either the positive part or the negative part, in order to bring everyone together and be open to all these different opinions and options, in order for people to understand why people do the things that they do and for what reason.
Every Sunday morning, 9 a.m., we get together at a table to enjoy conversations with food of thought and a lot of laughs. Community issues are addressed at our community table here on the community radio.
This is on a whole nother level.
Tell me where you get something for free.
88.5 FM WMNF, every Sunday morning. This is where you should be.
You know, how many, and I'm not going to preach, but how many of us said the Lord's Prayer before in our lives? Raise your hand if you had. Do you know in the Lord's Prayer there's one conditional element? There is one conditional element in the Lord's Prayer. There is one point that says, I need you to do this if I do that. It's a condition attached to what we ask for. You know what that condition is? When it says, forgive us for our trespasses as we forgive those. So we put a condition in there automatically. Every time you said a prayer, you said, God, do not forgive me if I don't know how to forgive my brother. Do not show me grace if I can't show grace to that guy coming out of prison or that prostitute out there or that dope head out there. Don't give me that love because I don't deserve that love until I know how to do them. That's a conditional. And so it should be a no-brainer for any congregate, any person that claim themselves to be a person of faith or any institution that says that they're an institution of faith, they should rush to stand up on this and say, wait a minute. If only by grace we are here, and as such, once a person has repaid their debt, give them their rights back. And we standing behind that. This ain't political. This comes straight from our teachers.
So why are you out here today?
That's kind of a complicated question. Depends on how you want to look at it. You know, on the one hand, we could say, well, some guy decided to shoot up a church. On the other hand, though, we could say that it stems back to lax gun control, you know, stuff like that. I guess the truest answer is a friend of mine was like, hey, I'm going to this vigil. Do you want to meet me there? And I was like, sure. You know, this is the first time I've ever been to something like this. So I really don't know how to feel, what to say, what to think.
Why are you out here today?
I'm out here to commemorate those that were killed in this act of violence and to hopefully find some like-minded people that are also hurt by this but want to take action and try to prevent it from happening again.
Tampa stands in solidarity with South Carolina, Charleston.
Good morning and welcome to the Urban Cafe.
Good morning, this is DT. I'm here with the Urban Cafe on 88.5 WMNF.
But in the building today, we have Jamal.
Hold on, stop, let this one talk. Okay, so, like,
good morning, Sam.
Good morning, this is Sam. Is my mic on? Hello? Hello, world.
It's on.
Okay, good.
We have Tina Marie Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hello. Facebook Live is literally all the way up.
And it's expensive to bury somebody.
Dad, what's
the point? How did we get there? That's the bottom line. I know we all have to go.
Nia's in the building. She's holding down the phone.
It is important, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's a two-way street, and there's a positive part of it, and there's a negative part of it.
Our new intern from UT.
Yay!
We got Sydney.
I don't like Phil like that.
Way over there in Germany. And, of course, good morning, Valtrinda.
Good morning.
Welcome to the number one show in the worst time slot. It's the Urban Cafe.
Go ahead, grab your juice, grab your donuts, grab your coffee. Come back to the table as we get ready to start a great morning here on the Urban Cafe. We want to welcome Senator Darryl Woodside back to the Urban Cafe.
The real X on his chest, Superman, Senator Woodside.
Senator, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
On the Urban Cafe.
Absolutely.
My coffee, y'all, on Sunday morning. The Urban Cafe.
All right.
We're doing great. I'm glad to be home for just a hot minute. As you know, we had a really tough week in Tallahassee last week for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is the reprehensible, terrible comments by Senator Artiles against two of our respected Senate colleagues. And I guess Senate President decided to cancel the meetings, and when the gentleman resigned, he sent us all home and said, go get some church, then come back ready for work.
And I got a quick question, Senator, because I realized that because of this tirade, some important bills were not voted on, mm-hmm. such as decriminalizing marijuana and also restoring the voting rights of ex-felons. Do you think it's possible that was a strategic ploy by the senator, or there's some kind of underlying reasons behind his tirade, like the timing of it?
Good question.
I don't think he was that smart to have thought of all of that. And
okay. I agree.
Shade.
I just think it was bad timing. There are some bills moving. We still have 2 weeks left to session. The biggest objective now is not so much legislation getting through, but the budget being matched up. Many of you know that the House passed an $81 billion budget. The Senate passed an $83 billion budget. And never in my 8 years have we been $2 billion apart. The good news is that a low-income pool is going to get funded. Healthcare should not suffer as drastically as it has in the past. And we're still working. I'm hopeful that sentencing, the criminal justice reform bills will get through. I'm hopeful that the medical marijuana bill will open up and African Americans will get a chance at this green rush and an opportunity to participate in all the money that's going to be made from medical marijuana. And I'm hopeful for education. Some of you know that the House passed a terrible bill called Schools of Hope. The Senate has taken that bill and tried to rewrite it. And that's going to be huge negotiations. We need to help schools like Potter. We need to help schools like Melrose and Campbell's Park, schools that have been perpetually failing. And there's a lot to do, and we got 2 weeks left to do it.
Yes, Senator. This past week, you guys just voted on the ride-sharing bill, and it passed 36-1. What bill? How is that bill going to, I guess, affect citizens, you think? And then also, I wonder why, you know, it passed 36-1. There was this one Republican senator out of Clearwater that didn't vote on the bill in a positive way. You could elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, I can't guess the motives of any senator that's the lone vote on a bill that the overwhelming majority of his colleagues support. There must be some principled reason, I would hope, for that lone vote. But what we've done is we've tried to take away from local control the ability to regulate, restrict Uber, Lyft, ride shares, network companies, and we've given it to the state. That's because people have spoken. The majority of people in the state have spoken. They want Uber. They want Lyft. They want ride sharing. And we're working towards creating that model.
All right. So on Facebook Live, we have Tammy online. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Tammy.
Hey, Tammy.
Hey, Tammy.
Hey, girl.
Tammy. Hey, girl. So Tammy asked Senator Roussan, can you advise if and when free college education will be coming to Florida?
That's a good question.
I don't know when that will happen. I wish it would happen yesterday as opposed to in the future. I know that those were items and debates talked about both at the state level and the federal level. Question is, how do we pay for it? How do colleges and universities get subsidized for this free tuition, free education? And the devil's always in the details of what it costs and how we make up that loss of revenue. But it's certainly something that we need to, that's been debated in the various campaigns, both federal and state.
You are listening to the best of the Urban Cafe.
Well, we have Representative Shaw Shaw, who's online, and he's actually in session currently. So he goes to Tallahassee, and he pretty much, you know, speaks for us. He's our representative, and how I like to explain who he is and what he does for us, we're his boss. So we tell him what to do, how to do it, and what we how we feel about it. So this is someone that that agreed to do this segment, and he's doing an excellent job. So with him in Tallahassee, he calls in every month, once a month, and just give us a feedback and give us, you know, an idea of what's going on up there, because a lot of times here in the community, we don't know, and right. we need to know, because right. we matter, right. you know, and we put them in position to do what we desire them to do. To
the
make.
Urban Cafe matters. We need some t-shirts, huh?
You know, okay. I'm right. sick of you, I told All you. Right. So yeah, so we have Shaw Shaw online, mm-hmm. and let's get it rolling.
Good morning, Mr. Shaw.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
We're great. How are you doing? No fishing today?
I am good. I'm good. I'm We just had Black Caucus Gala weekend, so we had a bunch of people up here in Tallahassee for those activities and brunches and galas and educational seminars, so that was fun.
Oh, excellent. And you also was on one of our favorites here at the station, Rob Loray's show. How was that? And you did an excellent job.
I appreciate it. You know, it's that show was interesting because, you know, it's so political and it's so... You know, they asked really good. Rob Loray always asked good questions, and we had just done the judicial term limits and all those things, and that always gets me revved up. So I was happy to be on that show.
Yeah, you did an excellent job. And one of the things, one of the topics that you guys was discussing, actually, there was quite a few of them, and I want you to kind of elaborate on it so that those that didn't see it has an idea. But you talked about the Visit Tampa, the tourism, and that whole thing, and also the trust funding as far as housing. So go into those two things, because those things were really interesting, and your take on it was good. So
we have entities here in the state of Florida called Visit Florida, called Enterprise Florida. They're two different entities, and Visit Florida promotes tourism. So Florida, as we all know, the economy of Florida is largely based on tourism. That's how we make money in this state, since we do not have a state income tax here. So a lot of our state budget is based on tourism, whether indirectly or directly. Enterprise Florida is the entity that recruits businesses to come to the state. So there are tax dollars that go to Visit Florida and go to Enterprise Florida. Those tax dollars are mixed with private dollars and other items so that we can advertise and create incentives and try to bring businesses and tourism here. So up in Tallahassee, there has been there's been discussions that taxpayer money should not be used for those purposes. So some people call that use of taxpayer dollars corporate welfare, that we should not use money for tourism and for job creation or bring businesses here just as from a philosophical point of view. I do not agree with that. I believe that we need to do everything we can to promote tourism and promote businesses here. If we need to put more transparency in the process, if we need to put better connection to the money versus results, how much money based on what the results are, I'm fine with that. But the proposals in Tallahassee were essentially to do away with Enterprise Florida completely and to gut Visit Florida to a place that they really, really would not be able to operate. So I voted against both of those proposals, and kind of that's what we were talking about on the show.
Yes, Representative Shaw, I got a kind of tough question for you. In this regards, this is regards to like urban development, community development. If you're giving, you know, businesses tax breaks and whatnot, would that be something that's going to cut the overall tax base of money that would be used to fund certain programs like community-based programs? Or how do we convert those corporate dollars from Visit Florida, Enterprise Florida, into helping our communities out? Because, just example, I come from Flint, Michigan, and I lived in Detroit. I saw a downtown Detroit spur, three casinos downtown, three pro sports teams downtown and whatnot, while the city was dying. It seemed like Detroit, only thing they cared about was bring business in, bring tourism in, but the city is dying, and I see that in some of our communities in Tampa. How do we make that transition from corporate dollars and of visitors coming in to the state and bring that money in our communities?
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. First thing I would tell you is that, one, if they don't come, we're not going to get them. We're not going to get anything from it anyway. So if they never come, it's not like they're going to have an impact on our communities anyway. You've got to get them here. And to get them here, you are competing against the Californias of the world, the Georgias of the world, the Marylands of the world, who provide these incentives for businesses to come. What you have to do is couch and craft the incentives in such a way that they are effective for the community, you know. Based, maybe, you know, you get a tax break if you hire so many people in the area where you go. You get a tax break if you create so many jobs in a certain amount of time. Those sorts of things. But they have to be crafted in a way that are meaningful, not only for the company to receive enough incentives to come, but for the community to be able to benefit. But I definitely agree with you that there is a balance to be struck. But you've got to keep in mind, if they never come, we're never going to benefit anyway.
Good point.
All right, I got a question for you, and as we wrap this up, so I know you're busy up there. One is that I got a great team here. They're on point. While you were talking, Lo had your picture up on our Facebook stream, and I look and I see your picture. You cheesing pretty hard. With
grin
that.
For days. Grin for days. I'm like, thank God he has all his teeth.
So you might just want to go revisit the photographer and get him a little bit more or less of a grin. That looks a little suspicious with that grin so hard.
To be a politician, you have to have one thing, the ability to keep a smile for like 30 seconds and the same smile. So that's something you just learned.
All right. We're going to let you get back. But before you go, I want to ask you how things are going. You know, we're really we're really close with the UACDC and the Prodigy program down here in Tampa. We do a lot of things with them.
Well, there's two things I want to talk about before I go. One, let me talk about the budget is what's going on now. So the budget has been released from the Senate and the House. And so the reason I'm probably not going to be back in Tampa until I think the weekend of the 21st or sometime around then, because now is the time where, you know, we're only talking really about budget stuff next week, and you've got to make sure that you're trying to fight for these dollars. So I'm spending a lot of time on this, on the Prodigy money, and I believe we're in a good place. We are not in the House budget, but we are in the Senate version, which means that we are in play, so to speak. So I'm working on it. Don't be shocked just because it's not in the House budget. That doesn't mean that it is dead. It is something that I'm working on. Second thing is something we voted on last week, which is the expansion of Stand Your Ground. And so, as I'm sure you all know and your listeners know, the existing Stand Your Ground law was already something that had been used in various cases to justify what I would say some bad actions. So what we've done now in Florida is put the burden of proof on the prosecutors to prove that the person isn't entitled to Stand Your Ground. The way it is now is if you're claiming Stand Your Ground, you've got to prove it to the court. The House just voted last week to make the prosecutors have to prove that you're not entitled to it. So it is a huge expansion of Stand Your Ground. It is now going to put the burden on the prosecutors. Essentially, they've got to prove their case twice now. They got to prove the case that you aren't entitled to Stand Your Ground, and then they have to prove the case again to prove that you're guilty of the underlying crime. So it was a very emotional day on the House floor. I don't think we got out until 7:45, 8 o'clock at night. There were some, as you can imagine, passionate speeches on both sides of this issue. But it is, you know, that is how the House voted.
All right. So I'm going to let you go. But before I let you go, I got to let you know that you need to continue working on one of the most important things that we need to happen so that Tina, so she could
smoke weed every day.
Ooh, Sean, you didn't hear that, Sean.
It's more of Jamal, but
I am an innocent.
How's things going on there with the medical marijuana situation?
I haven't seen the bill yet. I know it's coming. It just hasn't come in front of any of my committees yet. But, of course, I'm concerned that we're grandfathering in, not to get in the weeds, but I'm concerned we're grandfathering in seven entities essentially that will make all the money associated with this, and of course none of them are black. So, one, I have a problem with the grandfathering in, period. Two, with the fact that there's no minority farmers that are involved in this. So those two components are very troubling to me, and when it comes in front of me, I'm going to ask about that.
All right, and before you go, is there anything that the community people can do in regards to, you know, with the Prodigy campaign going on, or even just anything that we people here listening now need to know that they can do when you hang up to help push your these things through?
Well, I mean, I just continue to stay engaged and continue to, as I said last time, you know, I read all my emails and all my phone calls. I know a lot of representatives do. Continue to do that. Reach out to Senator Roussan as well and make sure he's aware of how much Prodigy means to the community. He is, as am I, but you know, continue to do those things and reach out to me. In fact, I just had a person reach out to me on email and talk to me about some homeowners association problems she was having in her homeowners association in my district. And when I get in office Monday, I'm going to go to the state and try to figure out what's going on. So if you have those kind of problems or you want to know what's going on, email me or call me.
And quickly, let everyone know what district you represent and, you know, which counties so forth, so they have a clear understanding of that.
Right. I am. I represent District 61, which is a little bit of West Tampa, all of East Tampa, Seminole Heights, Ybor City, and Progress Village. So it is a very diverse district, a district that has a lot of concerns based on where you are in the district. The concerns are different based on where I am. in the district, but it's one that expects you to be fighting and yelling and screaming when you're up there, and I'm trying to do it.
Okay, right. And give us your phone number, office number, and email address so that they can contact you.
I do not have on.
Oh,
right
shame
now.
On you.
I believe it is 850-717-5061. I believe that is the Tallahassee number. And my email is sean.shaw@myfloridahouse.gov.
Okay, great.
WMNF Tampa.
We have the UACDC, Ms. Sarah Combs in the building, so we are all the way up.
We have less than 10% single-family housing in the University Area community. So what does that mean? Well, it means that 90% of that community is not owned by that community. 90% of that community lives up north, lives out west, and they're just collecting rent. They have no real tie to this community, and for us, that's very, very difficult. And so we've got to change that percentage. We've got to start really focusing on single-family housing as a means to give residents the opportunity to buy into this community.
So, what exactly is mental illness anyway? Don't we all just have our ups and downs? As you can imagine, as a psychiatrist, I have heard these questions and similar ones more than just a time or two. And I'm always happy to answer them. Always. But I tend to like to start out by answering a different question first. A question that's almost the inverse. I like to start out describing what mental illness is not. So here goes. First off, mental illness is not being weak, lazy, or lacking willpower. In fact, many times, people with mental illness are some of the strongest people I've met as they learn to navigate living productive lives with what can be debilitating symptoms. Second off, mental illness is not a punishment from God or being possessed by the devil. Just like asthma, diabetes, and high blood pressure represent specific pathophysiologic disorders of the body, so too is mental illness a manifestation of so-called chemical imbalances of the brain. While it's important for a person to turn to spirituality to help cope with symptoms, the symptoms are not the result of a religious or moral failing. Third off, mental illness is not just a ploy to get attention. Those with a true mental illness generally have symptoms that are very uncomfortable for them and cause distress. The last thing most people with mental illness want is extra attention from others. And lastly, mental illness is not anything that can be ignored or willed away. Mental illness, just like physical illness, is something that should be treated, most generally with medication and/or talk therapy. So now that we've covered what mental illness is not, what is it? Mental illness is a pattern of behavior or thinking that causes significant emotional distress or social impairment. Depending on the disorder and the level of impairment, symptoms may be persistent, they may be relapsing and remitting, or they may occur in the context of a single episode. The DSM-5, or Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, has been produced by the American Psychiatric Association since 1952 and lists all the mental disorders along with the description of the symptoms. Common disorders include major depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, dementia, and schizophrenia, just to name a few. So how can you tell if someone is just having a string of bad days or if someone actually has a diagnosable mental condition? Now that's actually a tricky question. We've all had a bad day, and some of us may have even had a string of bad days related to death, divorce, illness, or some other challenging life moment. But how do you know when a string of bad days actually has reached the point of becoming a diagnosable condition that requires treatment? That may require the help of a mental health professional to figure out, because distinguishing between what is normal and what might be considered mental illness is wrought with fuzziness and ambiguity. Generally speaking, it's a matter of degree of impairment and social functioning, or the degree of symptoms. Mild symptoms may include a change in appetite or a lack of interest in fun activities,
But an extreme reaction may involve suicidal thoughts or the inability to get out of the bed. These aspects related to mental illness naturally cause